This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, an award-winning mix of special programs and homemade radio features. Tonight, we'll preview some of the amazing shows on our HD3 News Talk channel, including Chris Thiele's Live From Here.
My dad is getting old. My dad, I can tell he's getting old because my niece had an ice skating recital and my dad was supposed to record it. And he did. He just recorded the wrong little girl.
We'll also explore the idea of change and how we all relate to one another with the hidden brain.
So now this cab driver pulls over. He says, "Where are you going?" And I start to get crazy mad. "Where am I going? You got to take me no matter where I'm going." But instead of that, I think, "Wait a minute."
And we hope to also convince you to support us during our spring fund drive as we raise money to support our programming. The Public Radio Hour is next after this news update. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, and tonight we're giving you a glimpse of some public radio greatness you maybe have yet to hear on our HD3 News Talk channel. First of all, what is HD radio? Well, it doesn't stand for high definition radio, but rather it's the brand name of a digital technology that allows our transmitter to squeeze more programming into our 89.3 bandwidth. Most radios, like the one you're probably listening to right now, tune in the FM frequency, where you find our main signal. If you have an HD-compatible radio in your home or in your car and live within our signal area, you can also tune in nonstop classical music on our HD2 Classical 24 channel and our HD3 News Talk channel, which features a universe of news, talk, and entertainment programming. Just tune your HD-compatible radio to 89.3, and you'll see three options to choose from. You can also listen to all three of our channels streaming for free at WLRH.org, on your mobile device, and on your home smart speaker by asking it to play WLRH HD1, HD2, or HD3. For a pledge of support of $200 or more, we'll send you an Echo Dot smart speaker as a thank you gift. Or for a pledge of $150 or more, we'll send you a tabletop HD radio to help you enjoy all three channels. You can also buy these items from various retail stores. But either way, we hope you'll help us during our spring fund drive as we try to raise $120,000 to keep our community service mission alive. But enough with the serious talk. Let's have some laughs as we explore the amazing programming schedule on 89.3 HD3. One of the most popular shows is a weekly quiz show called Ask Me Another, which airs on HD3 Thursdays at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Let's have a listen.
From NPR and WNYC, this is Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton, and here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's fundraising season, and hearing about all the great contributions you're making to your local member station is like poetry to our ears.
Hey, Ophira, I know a poem.
Oh, yeah?
Do you want to hear it?
Okay, sure.
Okay. There once was a man from Nantucket.
Whoa.
That's good.
I'm going to stop you right there, Jonathan. How about we leave the poetry to our next guest? She may be one of the most esteemed and accomplished guests we've ever had on the show. It's former U.S. Poet Laureate Rita Dove.
She not only joined us at the Virginia Arts Festival in Virginia Beach for an interview, but she treated us to a poem she improvised on the spot.
Hi, Rita.
Hi, Ophira.
Welcome to Ask Me Another.
Thank you.
Okay, I know a U.S. Poet Laureate helps raise the nation's consciousness about poetry, but how do you do that?
You know, the best way to do it is to simply get out there and, you know, kind of bring it to the people. So I visited schools. I went to Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Did you ever get a 3 a.m., like, emergency, we need a poet right now kind of call?
Yes. Well, I turn off my phone.
You turn off your phone. What kind of hours does a poet keep?
It depends on the poet. This particular poet that you're talking to right now keeps very strange hours. My best hours are 12 midnight to 6. And truly, I come alive after dark like a vampire, and I just suck that blood all night long.
So when do you, so do you ever go out for dinner?
on the porch.
On the porch, nice. Nice.
I think this would be a perfect point to ask if you wouldn't mind actually sharing one of your pieces of poetry with us from, yes.
Sure.
Here you go. This is from your 2004 collection, American Smooth.
Mm-hmm. And this poem is actually based on ballroom dancing, which my husband and I took up long before Dancing with the Stars came across the Atlantic. And it deals with that most iconic American dance, Foxtrot. Mm. Foxtrot Fridays. Thank the stars, there's a day each week to tuck in the grief. Lift your pearls and stride, brush, stride, quick, quick, with a heel ball toe. Smooth as Nat King Cole's slow satin smile, easy as taking one day at a time, one man and one woman, rib to rib, with no heartbreak in sight. Just the sweep of paradise and the space of a song to count all the wonders in it.
Now, that was, you know, dealing with Foxtrot, and you're saying that you really are into ballroom dancing. Did it influence how you write your poetry?
Absolutely, because I was pretty much dancing through every poem, and I really wanted to try to get some poems that sounded like the dance they were describing. So there's right. a samba poem and called Samba Summer, and then there are waltzes and things like that. I have yet to write the tango one, though. That's hard.
Right, so you're trying to go with that same like rhythm, the whole rhythm of doing the dance.
Right, the whole rhythm of it, yeah.
You're the only artist in your family. Your father was a chemist. Your three siblings are in the sciences.
Yes,
and you became the artist.
The typical black sheep of the family, I guess.
Did you know from a very young age that you were like, I am artistically inclined and that's different?
Well, you know what it was? I knew that I loved to read, and there were books in the house. There were lots of books in the house, and I would read anything. So I read the science books. I read but I also read the Shakespeare, and I loved them. So I just knew I felt happiest when I was doing that.
And your mother quoted Shakespeare a lot to you, but didn't say I was quoting Shakespeare.
No. She would do things like, she'd be cutting the roast and say, is this the dagger I see before me, the handle? And, you know, I just thought she was getting a little, you know, kind of over the top. I didn't realize she was quoting someone, yeah.
So then when you're reading Shakespeare and you're recognizing these quotes from your mother, did you think, Shakespeare plagiarized my mother?
There they go, yeah.
So she clearly loved plays and poetry as well?
Yes, she did love literature. And so when my brother and I would do things like write our own comic books, it was fine. And my family, my parents just kind of played along, said, okay.
You wrote your own comic books?
Yes.
What were they about?
Well, we had our typical superheroes, Jet Boy, Jet Girl, and their dog, Jet Zumino.
And I like that you think this is typical, by the way.
No, well, I mean, you know.
This is like, so there was Jet Boy, Jet Girl, and yeah. And they could fly, clearly.
And they could fly, of course, and Remarkable Girl with her dog, Remark Arc. I mean, we were really bad. We were bad at the dog names, I'm sorry, but otherwise.
I just like that they all had pets.
Of course.
Okay,
but so never a cat for some reason.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know, because cats won't do it.
Because they were the villains.
Yeah.
So, you know, you are a professor at the University of Virginia, and for most people, poetry isn't seen in their minds as a moneymaker kind of career. Maybe parents dissuade their kids when they say, I would like to study poetry. What do you say to those parents?
I would say that, you know, you want your child to be happy. And so if they want to be a poet, you just say, well, you're not going to get any money from it. Will it still make you happy? And if they say yes, let them go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So we spoke with you before the show, and you actually offered to improvise a poem on the spot if I just gave you an idea.
Silly me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you still up for doing that?
You know, yes.
Okay. Okay, so, you know, here's inspiration off the jokes we made at the top of the show. Pleasure Beach.
Ooh. Let's see. I have to think of something that won't be censored afterwards. So let's go. And I think I should rhyme it.
Yeah,
why not?
I think so. Yeah, sure.
Why not? The tighter the rules, the better. Pleasure Beach. Take a ribbon of sand bordered by ocean, a golden band framed by perpetual motion of water, water that laps and receives. We walk the stretch, hoping to reach a bit of pleasure by any measure. That's what you name a beach.
How's that? I bow to you. Seriously, that was, I'm almost teary-eyed from just hearing kind of how your brain must work and marveling at it.
I have no idea what I just said.
It was amazing. It is just so easy to get lost in Rita Dove's voice.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's radio. It's a very intimate listening experience. And we hear from fans all the time how connected they feel to our show and to all kinds of shows that they hear on public radio.
So if public radio is your own personal pleasure beach, why not consider making a donation today? Any amount goes a long, long way.
If listening to our show and other weekend programs on this station brings you pleasure, please consider taking measures and donating today. That's a poem.
Ask Me Another airs on 89.3 HD3 News Talk every Thursday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. It's part of the wonderful diversity of shows on our HD3 channel, which we hope that you'll tune in and support this month during our spring fun drive. Listen to our HD channels with an HD-compatible radio or streaming at WLRH.org. And while you're at the website, please make a donation of any amount. And more importantly, leave us a comment about your favorite show or maybe a show you'd like to hear. One of the most popular shows on 89.3 HD3 is Chris Thiele's Live From Here, which evolved from longtime public radio favorite A Prairie Home Companion a couple of years ago. Chris has certainly made the show his own with fresh music and a new blast of energy. But one thing has stayed the same. You can never be quite sure what you might hear.
You've seen her on Conan and The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Carmen Lynch.
Thank you. I stopped online dating. I'm done. Now I just date the old-fashioned way. I just walk outside and hope. That's how people used to date. 10 or 20 years ago, you would just put makeup on and go outside. And be like, ta-da! I hope it's today. I'm at that age now where I'm dating both fathers and sons. You know, when you first start dating, you meet a son. He's someone's son. And then you get older and you meet a dad. And hopefully he's divorced, like he says he is. And there's one more category, grandfathers. I can't wait to hit that in a couple weeks. Have you seen grandfathers now? They're pretty hot. They do yoga. They're all kaled up. They're full of kale. Really nice. I do yoga. You have to do yoga or you're gonna die. Yoga's so silly, though. It feels like preschool. They're like, get your mats and your blocks and your blankets. Lie down. Close your eyes. Think of something positive. All right, that's it for today. We'll We'll see you tomorrow. I have to do yoga because I get restless, you know? I'm a light sleeper. Ugh, I hate being a light sleeper. I hear everything. I hear snoring. I hear air. I hear ISIS. They're so loud. I hate those people who sleep all night. They always show off, you know, I can sleep through anything. You know what? You're going to die in a fire. And I'll be watching because I'll be up. roasting marshmallows right next to your face. Sometimes when I'm awake at night, I read quotes. I like to go online and read quotes, you know. Like, some are stupid. Like, love like you've never been hurt. Oh, shut up. You know. What's the other one? Like, nobody's watching. Eat, I think. I don't know. Eat. Eat like nobody's watching. All right. I do that. Dance like you don't need the money. I think money makes you happy. I don't have any, but I can tell. I think it does. I know it does. I tried it once. I cried in a Mercedes. It wasn't that bad. I was like, I could do this all the time. I could be rich and depressed. It's so comfortable. My parents have been married 40 years. 40 years. I don't know how they do it. They make it look so hard. My parents just retired. When your parents retire, all they do is call you. All the time. They have nothing else to do. They just want to talk to you all the time. My dad's like, we went to the park today. What did you do? I'm like, I went to therapy and talked about you and mom for an hour. I love therapy. It's great. I love complaining to someone who can't leave the room. They can't leave because you pay them to sit down. I can tell my therapist wants to leave. I can see it in her face. She's like, just kill yourself. My dad is getting old. My dad, I can tell he's getting old because my niece had an ice skating recital and my dad was supposed to record it. And he did. He just recorded the wrong little girl. So now we have this video of this kid we don't care about. But she's so good. We watch it all the time and we pretend it's my niece. I know why he got confused. They're all wearing the same little outfits, you know? My dad is nearsighted. That's when you can't see far away. Why do you call it nearsighted? We should call it far blind. That's what it is. You're far blind. They don't do that with any other disorder. If you have testicular cancer, you're not like, I'm prostate healthy. My dad is very religious. Oh, he loves to talk about heaven. He reads books about heaven. He acts like he's been there on vacation. So I ask him about heaven. It's fun. I'll be like, Dad, what's heaven like? He's like, it's great. You get to be with your family. And everybody's happy and there are lights everywhere. I'm like, that's Vegas. Do you want to go to Vegas, Dad? Let's go find Jesus. I don't know. They're great. My mom is Spanish. Very Spanish. Very dramatic. Dramática. Spanish mothers. Oh, she always gives me a hard time about being broke. She's from Spain. Very dramatic. Hard time being... Ay, pero por favor. Nunca tienes dinero. You are always broke. I'm like, your whole country's broke. It's And then she shuts up. How can one person be so dramatic? She acts like she lives in a soap opera. When I was a kid, I would always ask her the same question. Who do you love more, me or my sister? It's a very innocent question. I just wanted to know. And she would always say the same thing. I'd be like, Mommy, who do you love more? And she'd be like, well, if I had a gun. What? If I had a gun and someone said to me, you need to shoot one of your kids right now, I don't know which one of you I would shoot. That is the same thing as saying I love you guys the same. There's no need to bring a gun into this story. Do you know how scared I was of my mother growing up? Always worried I was gonna make her angry with anything I said. Do you know how relieved I was when she finally killed my sister? I went to South Carolina. I went on my first horse and carriage ride. There were 8 of us. Yeah, they sent me right behind the horse's butt. So I was looking at it, as you do. And this man came up to the horse, and he lifted up the tail, and he jammed a stick about so long right into the horse's butt. And I was like, oh my God. Is this how you start the horse? And he was like, no, this is a thermometer. We have to take the temperature of the horse so we know he's okay to go on the tour. I was like, all right, well, I'm on a tour too. Thank you guys, I'm Carmen Lynch. Thank you very much.
Oh, what a funny, funny person Ms. Carmen Lynch is. She did stand up on our show at the Town Hall in New York last December. We're committed to featuring comedians like Carmen, as well as poets, authors, and other folks who have a story to tell. You can keep the comedy and spoken word coming by making a financial commitment to this here public radio station. We'll be back with more highlights in a few minutes, so call now and give what you can, and thank you.
We'd love to hear from you this hour with a donation to support your favorite shows, and perhaps a show you'd like to hear on our main signal. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, and it's our spring fund drive. Please help us sustain this community service mission with a donation or at least a comment right now at WLRH.org. This hour, we're exploring programs on our HD3 News Talk channel. You can hear Chris Thiele's Live From Here on HD3, Saturday evenings at 5 and Sunday afternoons at 1. It was a big change for public radio fans when Chris Thiele took the reins from Garrison Keillor a couple of years ago, and change is not always easy, but it's a topic explored on public radio time and time again in its many different manifestations. We'll hear more about that in our next segment as we preview one of the hottest new shows on the air from Planet Money called How I Built This, a show about innovators, entrepreneurs, and idealists and the movements they built.
It's Planet Money.
And How I Built This from NPR. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Robert Smith.
And on today's show, we have something just a little bit different for you, because over this next hour
of economics and innovation,
we're going to hear some of our favorite stories from the past year that have inspired us to think about the world just a little differently.
We're going to start today with a story about change. Now, here's a thing that you hear, I don't know, every single day.
The world is changing faster than ever before.
How about this? Boston researchers have developed a new supercomputer. They claim it can predict if a patient is about to die.
The high-tech fridge will be equipped with nano-articulated technology.
This week, it's not cowboys versus aliens. It's humans versus robots.
The world is changing faster than ever.
Well, there is one guy who does not say the world is changing faster. His name is Robert Gordon, and he's an economist, and he also knows an absurd amount about the history of technology. Gordon's case is that the world is not changing faster than ever. In fact, he says our problem isn't too much change, it's too little. To make his point, he gives us this example. Let's say you're a delivery guy in 1870, and you fall asleep and you wake up in 1940, and the new world you're looking at would be almost unrecognizable. But strangely, if you were that same delivery guy waking up decades later, today, that drastic change would have slowed to a crawl. Gordon has a name for this. He calls it the productivity paradox. Here's author Robert Gordon and NPR's Jacob Goldstein and Sally Helm.
This is what the productivity paradox is. We have all of this amazing technology, robots, artificial intelligence, the cloud, and it should be making us more productive. That's what technology does. But when you look at the numbers for the economy as a whole, all that technology does not seem to be making a difference. It does not seem to be making us more productive.
And you hear this and you say, there is no way that can possibly be true, right? It seems so impossible, which is why they call it a paradox.
Exactly. That's the paradox.
And there are a few different answers to this. Part of it could be maybe we are getting more productive, but we're just not measuring right. You know, it's easier to measure a productivity output per worker per hour when people are, say, making cars. But today, there's lots more people working in hospitals. And how do you measure the productivity of a hospital worker?
Sure, but even if you account for that, economists say, it really looks like productivity is still growing much more slowly than it used to.
They say, listen, it doesn't feel true, but trust us, when we do the numbers, that's what we find.
Robert Gordon thinks he knows what's going on. And his explanation, it goes back to the delivery guy who fell asleep in 1870 and woke up in 1940 and the world had totally changed.
Gordon says, compare that person to somebody who fell asleep in 1950 and woke up today. For the person who woke up today,
what would have seemed new to the 1950 person would be everything to do with computers.
Of course, computers, a huge deal. Laptops, iPhones are everywhere, all the magic that comes with that.
But then, Gordon says, think about everything else. Think about just like a normal house. Remember, that person who went to sleep in 1870 and woke up in 1940, they were shocked to see houses that had running water and refrigeration.
The person going to sleep in 1950 and waking up today would only find one element of the kitchen, which is new, and that is the microwave oven.
Not so great.
The person from 1950 visiting us today would find our cars entirely familiar.
Yeah, our delivery guy went to sleep with a truck, wakes up with another truck. Maybe it's a safer truck, maybe he has GPS now. But remember, last time, that truck replaced his horse-drawn cart.
Last time when he went to sleep, New York City had streets full of horses. The tallest building was a church. He woke up to subways and skyscrapers. This time?
Just the same subway system as existed then. Same Empire State Building rising above everything else.
And yes, he says, sure, the new World Trade Center is a little taller than the Empire State Building. But it's like with the car. It's just an incremental change. It's not some big revolution.
More of the same rather than something new.
Gordon says the world just has not changed as much in the past 70 years as it did in the 70 years before that. Those big 20th century changes driven by electricity, the internal combustion engine, those were just a much bigger deal than the changes that have been driven by computers.
Gordon says computers and the internet, they did give us that amazing decade in the late 90s and early aughts. That was when, you know, most people got the internet. It was when Google came along. It was when smartphones came along. We had all that already, you know, 10, 12 years ago.
Since then, Gordon says, not that much has changed.
But the iPhone!
Yes, one of the peculiar aspects of the last 10 years is that so much innovation has gone into the iPhone and all the associated apps. In fact, the record for productivity growth in the last 6 years is about as low as it's been in U.S. recorded history.
So it's as low now as it's ever been, as far as we know. Like, coming at this from the outside, I really do find it shocking.
That's because the main ways in which computers raised business productivity had already happened by 10 years ago. Uh-huh. And the nature of the iPhone, with most of its uses, is in your personal space.
So sure, iPhones are a huge deal in our personal lives, but they haven't really fundamentally changed the way that most of us do our work. And other technologies, robots, artificial intelligence, He says they haven't changed work that much either.
I play a game called Find the Robot everywhere in my life. When I travel, I get on an airplane, I go into a hotel, I see human beings do the same thing that they did 10 or 15 years ago. In office situations, going to the doctor, the dentist, the veterinarian, going into retail stores, going into restaurants, I see a large part of the economy that's operating in the same way as it did last year and the year before.
Gordon says this isn't just his little game of spot the robot. He says the numbers for the economy as a whole back him up. If, in fact, robots and computers were replacing humans in vast numbers, all those machines would lead to lots more output, and there would be fewer hours of human labor. So productivity would be going up really fast. But it's not. Productivity is barely going up at all.
Also, if robots and computers were taking all our jobs overnight, the number of jobs would be declining. But that's not what's happening. The economy has been adding millions of jobs per year, year after year.
I tend to look at myself as a jobs optimist, even if I may be a techno-pessimist.
Okay, so that's Robert Gordon's story of the last 150 years, also the last 10 years. Obvious question? What's next? When Robert Gordon thinks about the future, he thinks that the next 10 years, they're going to look a lot like the last 10 years. Sort of incremental changes, things get better slowly, but no big revolution.
When Gordon's book came out last year, this part, his claims about the future, that was what I think the most people sort of quarreled with. We asked Martin Bailey about this. He's the economist who is nervous about the productivity slowdown.
Robert Gordon has been fairly consistently pessimistic about productivity growth, and so far he's been proven right. Is he going to be right in the future? It doesn't look like it, because it looks as if that technology really is moving ahead.
And, I mean, you know, we're at the end of the show here. I'll weigh in. I have to say, I love Gordon's thought experiment about the guy falling asleep. I think it really is a lovely way to think about technological change and to think, oh, we're not so special right now. But when it comes to the future, I mean, it feels to me and to Bailey and to many of the people who I talk to, like Gordon, it probably is not right. It feels like things really are about to change in these big ways.
I don't know. I hear people talk about things being about to change in these hugely profound ways, but that always just kind of sounds like a vague dream to me. And then I think about Robert Gordon, who is just like down there in the dirt with all the details and every single date.
And he does know a lot of dates.
Every date. And what he's saying is, if you take the long view, you will see that slow incremental change is normal. We had 1,000 years of just horses and cooking fires. And then we had this really strange time, past couple hundred years or so, when things changed very quickly. And now, maybe we're back to the way things have always been, to another era where change is slow. Not a horse to a car, just an iPhone to a better iPhone.
You're listening to a special edition of Planet Money and How I Built This from NPR. I'm Guy Raz, here with Robert Smith. And Robert, you know, I just assume that, like, the massive amounts of technological change have actually made it easier for us to do more stuff, to be more productive.
I know, right?
Which is kind of fascinating.
But I can think of one thing that really has not changed over the years.
Which is?
How we stay on the air.
You mean through high-tech satellites and radio transmitters and streaming on your phone?
Nah, it's not really the technology I'm talking about. I'm talking about our funding model.
Aha, you mean that people give us money so we can turn the lights on, like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's this old-fashioned idea that you could put out something that people like and then they support it with their dollars.
Right, nothing really high-tech about it. Okay, so please, if you are hearing us now, pick up your rotary dial phone.
Or whatever means of communication you have.
Or whatever means you have. But do it, like, right now.
Do not fall asleep for 70 years, please. Show your support for Planet Money.
And How I Built This.
Today.
Here's how to help.
You can help support Alabama's most diverse and in-depth radio news and music programming with a donation right now at WLRH.org. We're trying to raise $120,000 during our spring fund drive. So if you believe in the facts and appreciate hearing a diversity of viewpoints, please lend a hand. And if you enjoyed that segment of How I Built This, tune it in every Wednesday afternoon at 3 on 89.3 HD3 News Talk. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, a weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. Tonight, we're exploring some of the great programs on our HD3 channel. If you hear something you'd like to hear on the main signal, be sure to let us know. This next segment comes from a program scrapping to find a place on the main FM signal. The Hidden Brain grew from a popular segment exploring life's unseen patterns on Morning Edition to a weekly hour-long program which airs on 89.3 HD3 Tuesday afternoons at 3. I love how this program draws connections between the strange ways we interact with each other. And that interaction is something we all need to try to better understand.
This is Hidden Brain. I'm Shankar Vedantam. In a special pledge drive edition of the show, we're playing a recent conversation I had with the actor Alan Alda about how we can all communicate and relate to one another better.
You have a wonderful story in your book about a moment you were trying to catch a cab. And one of the things that I didn't know about you is that among the many, many things you've done in your life, you were apparently a cab driver for a brief period of your life. And in the story, you were trying to catch a cab, and the driver of the taxi basically asks you where you want to go before he lets you into the cab.
Right, because in New York, at around 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon, the cabs are heading home. Their shift is over, and they don't want to take you unless you're going somewhere near where their garage is. So I did drive a cab, and I know that the law is if somebody wants to get in the cab, you have to let them in whether you want to take them or not. So I don't like these conversations about where are you going, because I know they're not supposed to ask. They're supposed to take you. Now, I had been doing all this work when this cab pulled over. And what the improvising work does is it actually builds up your empathy. You get very good at being able to figure out what the other person is going through emotionally. So now this cab driver pulls over. He says, where are you going? And I start to get crazy mad. Where am I going? You got to take me no matter where I'm going. But instead of that, I think, wait a minute. It's the time of day when he's switching shifts. He's got to give the cab to somebody else. I understand why he's saying it. And it helped me accept it. So I told him where I was going, gave him the address. He said, get in. So that felt pretty good. Then he says, what's the cross street? And I started to get crazy angry again. He's supposed to know the cross street. Right? But now I'm all empathized up, you know? So I said to him, wait a minute, I'm looking it up on my iPhone. I'm helping him out. He said, you know, you're a nice person. People get in this cab, they don't care about me at all. I'm really impressed with this. I said, well, thanks. He said, I've been trying to go to the bathroom for the last half hour. I said, well, then just drop me off. Take me to the corner. Don't go all the way around the block. He said, no, I'm taking you right where you're going. You're a nice person. The guy, he's giving up his kidneys for me. So the funny thing was, the exercises that we do in improv give you a little more empathy. And here was an example that I was using it in real life, and it was helping in the communication I had with this guy. I got where I wanted to go. I felt so much better about it. And I've noticed that the more empathy I have, the less annoying other people are.
You came up with a very interesting exercise at one point where you were trying to increase and train your own ability to empathize with others. And you came up with a system to actually sit down with friends or colleagues. What did you do?
Well, I realized I couldn't constantly be going to improv exercises. And I noticed that my empathy would sort of wane after a while. You know, we live stressful lives. And one scientist told me that she felt that stress, you know, the stress hormones in your body, when they build up, they kind of damp your empathy to some extent. So I had to find a way to build it up again because I'm beginning to really like being more empathic. So I thought, It has to do with relating to other people. So suppose I go through the day and people I run into, like a cashier at a diner, or people that I'm friendly with, and if I spend more than a few seconds with them, while we're talking, I try to figure out what they're feeling or what they're going through. What's their perspective? Where do they stand inside their head? And I would find I'd get a little more opened up to them. And that's what happened. By the time I talked to that cab driver, I'd been practicing this so much that I actually wasn't angry with him anymore. It seems to happen even if I don't name the emotion. I thought it would be important to name the emotion. And I guess that does, because you can't always name the emotion. You don't really know for sure, but maybe making the effort to name it puts you in touch with them better. But I also notice, if I'm just noticing the color of their eyes and taking it in, you have very nice brown eyes.
Thank you.
I didn't notice that till now. And you know, it took me about a half an hour before I knew you had a beard. Which is proof to me that we all can improve on letting each other in, because you can talk to some, I know in my experience, I'll be talking to somebody for 10 minutes and I'll say, are you really looking at this person? And I realize there's a blob where the face ought to be. And that doesn't help connect with the other person, because I think when I really see you, I think something changes on my face. I think I get a little more focused on you and a little more related. And then I see something change on your face. I think it's a dynamic interaction where you're changed by how I'm changed, and it goes on and on like that. And we have a much better chance of getting together on what we're talking about. And by our connecting, the people watching us have a greater incentive, a greater impulse to pay attention to us. Because when two people are relating, it's hard not to look at them.
Alan Alda, thanks for joining me today on Hidden Brain.
Thank you.
That was actor Alan Alda speaking with me at the Edlovich Jewish Community Center in Washington, D.C. We've been talking about his book, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? My Adventures in the Art and Science of Relating and Communicating. Now, if you're listening today, I'm guessing you're a fan of Hidden Brain and a fan of public radio. Or maybe you're just a fan of Alan Alda. Lots of people tune out during a pledge drive, but you're still here. Please consider pitching in now. Here's how.
We hope to have your support this month as we try to raise $120,000 to support our public service mission. Please give if you can at WLRH.org. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, and we're highlighting some of the best programs on our HD3 News Talk channel. If you're a fan of podcasts, there's no better way to find new things to enjoy than by tuning in The Big Listen on HD3, Thursday afternoons at 3.
Hi, this is Taryn from Richmond, Virginia, and I just want to shout out the Black Joy mixtape by Amber Phillips and Jasmine Walker. It's dope because they are just super cozy and funny and thoughtful about politics and news and all types of other things.
Over 50% of guns are owned by 21% of the population. And gun control, like when we're talking about gun reform, you know, people aren't necessarily talking about what happens with all these people with guns, specifically these white extremists who right. exist in this country, who are just being violent, like off the basis or or fear of melanated people in this country.
Right.
There's no way.
Check it out. And yeah, have a good one.
Hey, pals. Welcome back to The Big Listen. I'm Lauren Ober. And if you are also a fan of any super cozy shows like the Black Joy Mixtape, ring up the pod line and tell us about them. The number is 202-885-POD1. It's almost always a good day for some cozy. If you've ever tried to save a long-term relationship before, you might have come across this name, Esther Perel. She's the Belgian psychotherapist whose TED Talks on love, intimacy, and infidelity have garnered millions of views online.
We have a romantic ideal in which we turn to one person to fulfill an endless list of needs, to be my greatest lover, my best friend, the best parent, my trusted confidant, my emotional companion, my intellectual equal. And I am it. I'm chosen. I'm unique. I'm indispensable. I'm irreplaceable. I'm the one. And infidelity tells me I'm not.
Over the years, Perel has worked with tons of couples to figure out how they can fix relationships broken by infidelity, ambivalence, or neglect. And recently, she allowed some microphones into her office to capture therapy sessions with real couples. But don't worry, they all consented. The result is a totally unique show called Where Should We Begin? Esther Perel, welcome to The Big Listen.
My pleasure.
I feel like after listening to your show, someone needs to make flashcards with all of the things that you say. Like, do you want to hear or do you want to be right? Sex and art. Death and mortality live in the shadow of infidelity. Affairs are our attempts to recapture lost parts of ourselves. And I feel like you could put all of those on cards and people could just carry them around with them as sort of daily affirmations. I'm just considering maybe it's a business idea for you.
Will you do the design with me?
No. No, I can't do any of that.
No, it's very beautiful, actually. To me, if you quote me like this, it means that you are listening. Mm-hmm. And then it also means that I am able to convey something succinctly and clearly. And both of those are important.
Right. I feel like one big part of, or one thing that keeps coming up is listening. And are you actually hearing what the person is saying? Or are you using your own filter and this is what you think they say? I mean, is that a thread you see throughout the couples you work with?
Let me set it up for you a little differently, because, you know, here is a podcast in which I open the door to a psychotherapy office. Nobody has ever sat in on a therapy of another couple. But in a broader sense, most often we don't know what really goes on in the backstage of a couple. Couples are often quite isolated and they ask themselves, is this natural? Is this normal? Do other people go through this? Am I alone? And here is this unit that is today living with more expectations than any other relationship unit ever has. Relationship expectations for coupledom are at an all-time high. And yet, they are not necessarily coming with the most fine-tuned ear. They come with the deep need to be heard, but they don't necessarily come with the deep wish to listen to the other.
So there's a part of him that wants to try to tell you, I also felt something. Betrayal comes in many forms. He didn't feel betrayed. He felt abandoned. And you are basically saying, grow up.
Right. Okay. And it's not true. And I don't think it's true. I don't think he got abandoned.
You want to hear or you want to be right?
I want to hear.
Then you're going to have to maybe not be so right.
How much of that is just ego?
I would say an ego makes a relationship, but a relationship also creates the person. Mm-hmm. It's interactive. It's interrelated. You make the relationship, but the relationship makes you. And that is a fundamental thing to understand about couples, is that couples think that one person is a certain way and the other person is a different way, when in fact we are not at all the same person in all our relationships, but we become a certain person in a particular relationship because of the dynamic that we have with that person. So in this relationship, I may be the talker, but in the previous one, I was the listener. In this relationship, I'm the one who's often wanting to move out or move on or move faster or move deeper. In the previous one, I was on the other side. And that has to do with who's in front of me. Mm-hmm. So the big secret of couples is that we actually make the other. By virtue of how I am, I co-contribute in who you will become mm-hmm. with me.
Mm-hmm. You're married?
35 years.
Do you,
Do I use my lessons?
Well, I wasn't necessarily going to ask that. I was going to say, do you use them on your spouse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I would hope that I've collected my own best tips, you know, or my best behavior over time. Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there's a single couple that is together for many years that would say we haven't gone through our own formative experiences,
yeah.
our lessons, our challenges, you know. And the way I like to say it often, because it's a sentence that has actually really helped a lot of the couples that I see who are dealing with the crisis of an affair, is that today in the West, many of us, most of us, are going to have two or three relationships in our adult life,
mm-hmm.
marriages, committed relationships. Some of us are going to do it with the same person. And so the only thing where my husband and I maybe don't always agree is how many marriages have we had together?
How many do you say you've had?
I say three, he says four.
I mean, I kind of love that, because then you're allowing yourselves license to be different people and to change and evolve and allow your relationship to change and evolve and be something totally new and different. It seems unrealistic that we would expect anybody to be the same from, you know, when you meet in your mid-20s to, you know, when you're grandparents or something.
No relationship system, no living organism in nature, in human life, or in companies can survive without change.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not grow, if you do not evolve, you fossilize and you die. If you grow too fast and all the time and you deal with one change after another, you go in chaos, you dysregulate, and you also are off track.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no relationship system that can continue to be alive, to thrive, to be engaging, to be vital, vibrant, that doesn't change. That is very strange that people understand that for every other system. There's nobody would ever think of that for a business. Nobody would think of that for a school. So but when it comes to romantic love, because I found you, that one and only, there is this notion that from there, it just should kind of, you know, flow.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that that's not how a relationship works. It's active engagement. It's work. But it's the creative work. It's taking risks. It's deepening. It's dealing with your darker sides. It's challenging your own levels of acceptance of the other and of yourself. It's all of that. It's mm-hmm. a very vital system, actually, mm-hmm. when you allow it to breathe.
Esther Perel is the author of the new book, The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity, and the host of the show, Where Should We Begin? From Audible. To find out more about her work, check out biglisten.org. Now, how much do you love listening to public radio and podcasts? A little bit? A lot? A huge amount? Well, if you listen at all, you know what you should be doing. Kicking us some of your sweet, sweet dollars so we can continue to make the things that you like. You have the power to keep great programming coming from your favorite public radio station. And here's how.
You can support this signal and everything we do for the Tennessee Valley community with a donation at WLRH.org. We hope you found some things to enjoy tonight on our HD3 channel. Don't forget, you can also check out our HD2 classical channel, streaming at WLRH.org or with an HD-compatible radio. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for supporting this public radio station. We're doing everything we can to build this station around you and our community, so get involved and raise your voice, because we are listening. Thanks for tuning in the Public Radio Hour this week. Have a great night. I'm Brett Tannehill.